favor and unearned kindness on behalf of thousands who move toward me and who love me, and also who approach me by closely observing and carefully considering my terms, the conditions of my covenant. This is from Shemoth. These are the names, Exodus 20, 4 through 6. Every church and religious institution the world over remains overtly opposed to this divine edict. They all claim to be a house of worship of God, a place where people bow down, a place that is surrounded by all sorts of imagery and carvings. And yet, the one and only God said, don't do any of that. The very thing that they stand for, bowing heads and worshiping God, God said, don't ever do. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? Ironic, truly, that religions do exactly the opposite of what God said. And so, if you're doing what God said is wrong, and you're not doing what God said I'm encouraging you to do, what does that mean? What those who are beguiled by that religion, those who participate in that religion, those who go into those buildings and bow down and worship God surrounded by all sorts of carved imagery, not listening, not observing, not caring about the terms and conditions of the covenant, which are the only source of mercy. If you're doing the opposite of what God is providing as guidance, then which direction are you going? Toward God or opposite, away from Him? And from this statement alone, if you are informed and rational, you should be able to draw the conclusion that religions and religious institutions don't lead people to God, but instead away from Him. In a way, it is like the spokes on the wheel. You know, so many modern theologians and politically correct pontificators will talk about all religions are spokes on the same wheel and they all lead to the center where God is. Well, it's exactly the opposite. All religions are spokes on a wheel. That part's not opposite. But they all lead directly away from where God is. All lead directly away in different directions, but they're all leading away from Him. You know, it shouldn't be surprising, even when you consider the wheel metaphor. In a wheel, when the wheel is designed to do one thing, is to turn, right? When a wheel turns, what does the centrifugal force do? What is the force on a wheel if you are somewhere on one of the spokes of a wheel, one of these religions, and the wheel begins to turn? Where does the centrifugal force take you? To the outside, away from the center. And so wheels are like religions, and spokes on those wheels are like all of the various flavors of religion, all of which lead away from God. This being known, we have Glenn calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning, Glenn.
Oh, good morning. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, you just begged a time-honored question. If the centrifugal force to cast things away from the center, where is the centripetal force that holds the electrons close to the nucleus? Why doesn't the whole universe just fly apart? That's an ancient physics question, but that isn't why I called. I'm sure you're probably aware of that. You know, why doesn't everything just fly apart if it's spinning? First of all, I wanted to mention the Christian Mingle thing. If I were the marketing manager for Christian Mingle, I'd make darn sure that commercial stays right in the time slots where it is, because you keep giving them free advertising because there's no such thing as bad press.
Let me speak to both of us, too. One is that electrons actually don't orbit. They hover. They vibrate, but the notion that that electrons orbit around the nucleus of an atom is no longer considered appropriate. They hover in orbitals, so they actually vibrate in those orbitals, and that we actually don't know where they are. We use calculus and we use a variety of physical theories now to predict where we think the most likely place that they may be, but we actually don't know where they are. And my sense is that the thing that causes energy to appear as matter, to represent itself as matter, is a communication mechanism. I think that God literally communicated energy into matter, and that the glue of the universe is in fact communication is what holds things together. As for bad, there's no such thing as bad publicity. I think God would beg to differ with you. I understand that it is a myth of marketing, that there's no such thing as bad publicity. It's a political myth mostly. You know, so long as they don't they spell your name right, you want the publicity, because name recognition is the mother's milk of political campaigns. But that really is a myth. Bad publicity is stunningly destructive to individuals' credibility. And Yahweh is a proponent of calling it as it is. He is not one to ever remain silent when people are promoting lies in his name around him. He is always calling them out, exposing them, condemning them. So since that's God's style, I think it's probably good enough for me.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Your third point.
Okay,
then, Glenn?
Let's say the next one. The proper form of the indefinite article preceding the word Islamic is N. It has the N in there, please. I guess I could go. I don't want to come up with a word for you. I will say this. Okay,
yes.
here's the one I've been wanting to get at for a long time. One of the ones. I thoroughly enjoy your Hebrew exegetical work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start talking about the pictographic nature of the alphabet and all that.
Mm-hmm.
The English alphabet is pictographic as well, by the way, but it's esoteric as opposed to exoteric. But anyway, I enjoy all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, you potentially have, you know, some real, you know, contribution to make to the understanding about the stuff and the names of that. But some linguistic distinctions are more important than others, and I think some of the English distinctions that you're making relative to like words like religion, politics, doctrine, and stuff like that may not serve you well over the long term, and you know they may cause you to be perceived as being disingenuous. I mean, I even know like people who would accuse such use of words as being like, you know, neurolinguistic mind control technique because of the deliberate creation of cognitive dissonance. You know, some would say that, you know, you engage in political editorial and then deny being political, and then in religious instruction, but then deny, you know, then the whole concept of religion.
Right.
I don't think it's okay to use certain English words in their traditional ways.
Okay.
You know?
All right, Ken. Let me answer those questions, but thank you for calling, and I will subscribe to that. The idea that someone is being religious because they expose and condemn religions, or that they're being political when they expose and condemn politics, I think is silly. That would be to say that would be to call Yahweh religious for writing the book known as Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, which was written to us Gentiles for the express purpose of condemning religious and political regimes. And so to tell you what is wrong with being patriotic, what is wrong with being political, what's wrong with being religious, which is what Yahweh does particularly in Yirmiyahu, but he does it also throughout his testimony, is not being the thing that he is condemning. It is like a father that tells you, don't put your hand on the stove or you will get burnt. That does not mean that the father is somehow associated with the stove. It is essential that we, in a world where free will is important, that we understand the consequence of our allegiances, whether they be to human institutions or to Yahweh's covenant. And God goes to great lengths to tell us about the consequence of us choosing to trust, to believe in, to be dependent upon human, religious, and political institutions. And since the covenant requires us to walk away from our country, from Babel, which is, God defines in Yirmiyahu, as being a religious and political construct, that it is important that we understand why he asked us to walk away and to explain the reasons that he is warning us in this regard and telling us what the consequence is of embracing religion. I mean, he's using Awon here, which is a very similar term to Babel. Babel from Babylon, which means to corrupt and confuse, and Awon, which means to pervert and corrupt. Very similar concepts. And God is saying that if you engage in those things, which are corrupting societally, I mean, this is so when you're talking about corrupting your children to the third and fourth generations, when fathers are doing that, we're talking about a societal corruption. Societal corruptions are manifest typically in two things, politics and religion. And so you've got God etching this in stone that this is a very negative consequence. He even goes as far as to say that those who are engaged in Awon, corruption, just like those who are engaged in Babel, which he's asked us to walk away from, are actually hostile to him. And so I think it is germane for us to explain how what he is saying is relevant in our lives today. And that's why we discuss these things. Now, if the explanation, and I have probably done it two or three times on this program, of the linguistic basis for religion is somehow hypocritical, I don't understand how. What I have shared with you is that religion is based upon, the English word religion is based upon the Latin word, religere, and it means to rebind. It's based upon a ligament which holds the bones together. To hold people together, to bind people together, to bind people to human institutions is the very nature of religion. Now, there is no Hebrew word for religion, although all of the manifestations of religion, Yahweh condemns. With him, your choice is relationship or religion. You can't have religion and relationship. So it is extraordinarily important that we understand why God is opposed to religion and why, if you choose religion, it is impossible for you to form a covenant relationship with him. This is a matter of life and death. We'll be back with Shattering This after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering This. I am your host, Yetta. We were talking about Yahweh's second of three general statements that he etched on the first of the two tablets in stone that have become the centerpiece of the Book of Shemoth. These are the names that have been misrepresented by the title Exodus in a book that would be known to Yahweh as his Torah, which means teaching, but has been corrupted by Christians and others to the Book of Exodus in a concept called an Old Testament. There is no Old Testament. There is only one covenant, and it will never grow old. One of the words that was in this particular statement that I loved, it's one of my favorites, is Kana. It conveys a host of marvelous insights into Yahweh's nature and his personality. Yes, it tells us that God is jealous. And people would say, oh, that's a bad thing. You ought not be jealous. Why? Because Paul wrote that love is not jealous. Well, Paul was wrong about that in many things. If you are not jealous, desiring a relationship, not only with God, but with those you love to be faithful and exclusive, then your love isn't worth anything. Kana conveys qualities which denote a strong emotional response and possessiveness in the sense of being hostile to anyone or anything which disrupts or threatens a relationship. Kana says that God is passionate and zealous, that he is deeply devoted to and committed to loving partnerships, that the love that we manifest for God and the love that God manifests for us inside of his family covenant relationship is what drives him. It is the one thing that he's saying beyond everything, yes, I act as your Savior. He said that in the first statement. He said, yes, I hold the title of being God, and, you know, that's a responsibility. But when he defined an aspect of his character, he said, yeah, I perform mercy, but what is an aspect of my character that is essential for you to know, so essential I'm going to etch it in stone? Kana, passion, zealousness, protectiveness, zeal for a relationship, jealousy in the sense of, I don't want anyone harming my children. I don't want anyone disrupting the relationship I have with my children. These things known, we have Robin who has called in. Robin normally just listens on her phone as we present the program, but Robin has been kind enough to interject today and has either a question or a statement. Hello, Robin. Welcome.
Well, good morning, and I appreciate you taking my call like this. I do have a question about these people that write books about their afterlife or after-death experiences, saying that, you know, kids coming back with messages for their parents, that they're all right, they don't want to, they wouldn't come back if they had the chance, and Jesus is teaching in heaven all the time, you know, and know what he looks like, and people like Todd Burpee and that Betty, I can't remember her name, wrote that book in the late 70s, Life After Death.
Yep. Yeah, the answer to that is really conditioning. It's like the woman who is responsible for the Pope John Paul II being canonized, and she's looking at this picture that she set up as an altar of John Paul II, this big picture of John Paul and candles and all sorts of religious paraphernalia all around it in the altar, and she's praying to John Paul to heal her of a brain injury. And she hears in her head the picture say, be not afraid. You know, religious jargon, be not afraid. And it's exactly the same thing. She has been so conditioned by her church that she hears inside of her what her church teaches her. The same thing is true with these people who claim to either had near-death experiences or they claim to have communed with those who have died. They hear them say what they have been conditioned to hear. Yosha made a statement in this regard, you know, and towards the end of his Sermon on the Mount, he ends it by saying, not anyone who calls me Lord, Lord is going to enter the kingdom of heaven. Not anyone calling me Lord. Because if you're calling him Lord, then you haven't got a clue who he is. If you don't have a clue who he is, you're not having a relationship with him.
That's right.
Then he says, but only those who act upon the will and the desire of my Father who is in heaven. And he says that because of two things. One is, if you understand Yahweh as Father, and you understand the importance of the covenant to him, then if you are interested in acting upon what he wants, which is for us to accept the terms and conditions of the covenant, which is this very statement that we have been considering here that he etched in stone, that if that is your focus, if that's your priority, then you're going to be part of heaven because you're focusing on what he's offering. But then it's what Yahusha says next that I think is a specific answer to your question, Robin. We've come against the commercial break, so if you could stay on, I'm going to try to answer this question about why people hear what religion teaches them. When we return to Shattering Mist, because I think Yahusha told us. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. I am Yada. We have Robin on the phone, and Robin has asked us the question as to how is it that the devotees of religion claim to have heard from their loved ones who are dearly departed, that they are in heaven and that they can tell them exactly what Jesus looks like in heaven and that he is teaching them all the time and that they don't want to come back. That's the reason is because they've been conditioned to believe that those conditions exist. And when a child dies, parents will do anything to imagine that that life is just not over, that they did not misguide that child is in heaven. Even sons and daughters will say that of their parents. You know, if a person wins a sporting event and then their parent has passed away recently, they'll almost say, you know, I could feel and see my father or mother looking down at me from heaven. It's what they've been conditioned to believe. And so to a large degree, the reason religion even exists is to satisfy that void of a parent when a child dies or a child when their parent dies. And this, well, there must be in heaven and I'm going to see them again one day. And that's what they have been conditioned to believe in their religion. And so it is the thing that they imagine. And Yosha spoke to this, you know, after saying, not anyone saying to me, Lord, Lord, will actually, as a result, will enter into the kingdom of heaven. But by contrast, the one presently acting upon the purpose and desire of my Father, the one who is in the heavens, he said, many will say to me. So you're talking about why do they say these things? Well, listen, many will say to me in that specific day, Lord, Lord, in your name, did we not actively speak genuinely inspired utterances? So Yosha is saying that people will claim that this is an inspired teaching, that, oh, yeah, my children, they have seen Jesus. Now, by the way, there are no bodies in heaven. It's a spiritual realm. So you can't see him as a physical body. He ain't Jesus. It's abundantly clear that if somebody actually was with him, they would actually know his name. So here you are, God saying, you know, people are going to say these things. They're going to say, didn't we speak genuinely inspired utterances? That's what the books that you're talking about are saying.
Well, and also, I sincerely believe that.
That's right. Also, in your name, we drove out demons. And in your name, we built many miraculous things and institutions. And we made and did these great things. They actually believe it. And then I will profess to them, because I never at any time knew you, you must all depart from me. Those involved in Torahlessness, those of you who are in opposition to and have attempted to negate the Torah, all of those of you who are without the Torah, get away from me. Yeah, they've been conditioned. That's the reason when Yahweh was speaking of in this second of the three statements that he etched in stone, and he is speaking of fathers corrupting their children to the third and fourth generation, that's what he's speaking of. That if you constantly input religious rubbish, your children are going to believe it. If you run a commercial millions of times that says, find God's match for your life, join Christian Mingle and receive God's blessings, the gullible, the malleable, are going to believe it.
Yes, they are.
That's exactly why this is so serious. This is the reason that God wants us to walk away from religion, is because the seriousness of the consequence of religion. You know, here, I'm going to share with you something that was written by Shimon Kefesh. I'm sure familiar that Shimon Kefesh means the nickname Kefesh was afforded him by Yosha. He was Yosha's disciple. His given name means he listens. He was actually Shimon ben Yosha. His father's name was Yosha, which means Yahweh is merciful. And he is known to us as Shimon Kefesh because Yosha gave him the nickname The Rock. He is Yosha's disciple.
Yes.
These are the last words that he wrote. Therefore, we await a new universe and a previously unknown spiritual realm, and a freshly created earth according to his promise, expecting in which that the righteous and vindicated will live. So he's beginning this by telling us that Paul lied when he said that, the Torah cannot vindicate. And he lied when he claimed to have seen Yahusha on the road to Damascus, because this is preceded by saying that when he is visible to us again, the entire world will see him at the same time. Literally, the sky will be ablaze. So, dear friends, those who are eagerly anticipating, knowing that the vindicated and righteous are going to live in heaven, he's saying, those who are eagerly anticipating this make every effort to become pure, without blemish or defect, blameless, avoiding judgment on his behalf. Now, how do you avoid judgment?
You follow the Torah.
Right. You pay attention to the five terms and conditions of the covenant. And as a result, the five benefits of the covenant relationship leave us blameless. Specifically, the third condition of the covenant, where Yahweh says, walk to me and become perfect. The path to God that is presented in the Torah in association with the covenant is the path that begins with the doorway of Passover, which is responsible for eternal life. The next step being unyeasted bread, which is responsible for perfecting us, so that the third step is being adopted into God's family on Bukurim. So, dear friends, those eagerly anticipating being righteous and vindicated and living in heaven, earnestly make every effort to become pure, without blemish or defect, blameless, avoiding judgment for him, learning to be found with reconciliation leading to salvation. So rather than faith, what Shimon Kefesh is saying that is, Yahusha taught me that the key aspect to our relationship with Yahweh, to being vindicated, is learning, so that we're in a position to respond. And our learning will lead to reconciliation, leading to salvation. So this regarding our upright one, Yahweh, shows steadfast endurance and constraint, always analyzing while expressing righteous indignation towards the adversary, even being exasperated, considering forming opinions regarding the process of salvation, inasmuch as it pertains then to this, to our esteemed countryman, Apollos, Paul, through the clever use of human philosophy, having been produced by him in writing to you. And even as in all epistles, inside of them they speak and convey a message which encompasses the other side, deploying circular reasoning, which is different and opposed to this. Opposed to what? Opposed to vindication and salvation. Opposed to living in heaven. Within which there are some things that are difficult to understand, hard to comprehend, and detrimental to comprehension. Speaking of Paul's letters. In which there are things that are difficult to understand, hard to comprehend, and detrimental to comprehension, which the uneducated and the improperly taught, as well as the malleable, will misinterpret and distort, turning away, as also with the remaining inferior writings, pertaining to their own individual destruction and annihilation.
So what do you do with the void that is presented when someone particularly close to you has passed? Because in Ecclesiastes, the silver cord is returned. And as you said in the sermon of the dispensation on the mount, they cease to exist.
You're right.
And if you're waiting for that white throne of judgment, that's probably not a good thing.
Correct. Yes. I have had a number of people who have written me who have lost children. And they say, you know, I've read parts of Yada Yah or parts of the Introduction to God, and it's obvious that my child's faith in Jesus Christ and in Christianity is to no effect. I understand that logically, but I can't let it go. I can't let it go. And so they will choose to sacrifice their own soul because they know that their child's soul is not as they had hoped it would be. And so my experience has been that when you're dealing with somebody who's trying to deal with a loss of a loved one and has parroted and manifest in their response the promise of religion, which is untrue, that by that point it is way too late. There's a certain point where the person has swallowed the bait and has hooked themselves, and they have been caught in their own net, and at that point there really is no way to reach them. It's almost impossible, Robin, to use evidence and reason to motivate a religious individual to question their religion and then leave it when it is proved untrue. It is extraordinarily easy to prove that the Christian religion is untrue. In fact, all you have to do is quote God himself, and you can prove 1,000 times over that the Christian religion is untrue. And yet the person who is deeply religious as a Christian will reject all evidence, including testimony directly from Yahweh himself, even from Yahusha, that undermines their religion. They will literally reject it, and they will viciously go after the person reciting that evidence. You cannot
right.
reach them. You cannot reach them. Now, imagine when you take that to the next step, and you've got somebody who has embraced their religion because of the anguish over having lost a loved one. It can't be done.
Well, yeah, they use that as a crutch.
Yeah, but it can't be done. At that point, you're not going to reach them. You can't help them.
True. All right. But what about those of us who are Torah observant and recognize that they've gone on? Death is a blow. And there's a void there.
Right.
So to fill that void is to look forward and not back. Is that the end of that?
Yeah, we're up against the commercial break, but we'll have 6 minutes when we return. And so, Robin, stay with us, and we'll try to address that void. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Mystery for today. I'm your host, Yetta. We're here with talking with Robin about the void that is left when a loved one passes. And you know the Torah, so you have embraced the terms and conditions of the covenant, so you know the fate of your own soul. But you still have a loved one that has passed, that passed before they made their personal decision relative to the terms and conditions of the covenant. I can speak a little bit about this from personal experience. My mother was deeply religious. She was as devoted to the Christian religion as anyone could be. She is deceased. Her soul no longer exists. I don't look at the fact that I will never know my mother again as a void, however, because there are aspects of my mother's nurturing that are now part of my life. My mother-in-law and father-in-law were wonderful people. They have both passed, my mother-in-law quite recently. Even though I know that neither of them knew Yahusha, neither of them knew Yahweh, neither of them knew the terms and conditions of the covenant, they were the product of our society, just as Yahweh had said, being corrupted by our society. Good people, but they didn't know Yahweh. Yahweh didn't know them. And so their souls no longer exist. But their legacy lives on, their memory lives on, their contribution lives on in their daughter, my wife. And so I enjoy their contribution to creating the beautiful person that she is. Ramana, the best answer to the question is that there is nothing we can do for those who have passed on, who did not embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant during their mortal life. The only two things that we can do are we can continue to learn more about who Yahweh is and what he is offering so that we not only draw closer to him and enjoy our life with him, but also so that we can share with others, so that someone that you influence along life's way might also come to know him. And it is the best way to fill the void over someone that you have lost is to fill that with the love and enjoyment of your relationship with Yahweh and the covenant and those that you've come to know who have embraced this covenant. Does that help at all?
Well, yes, of course, and sort of goes without saying. I mean, our little group is wonderful, interactive and supportive, and, you know, so...
Yeah, what you're speaking of here is that there's a, I think actually it grew out of the forum on Yada Ya. If you go to yadaya.com, there's a forum on yadaya.com that is anonymous that you can participate in that was specifically designed for two things. One is fellowship, so that in this connected world, people that have chosen to participate in Yahweh's covenant can exchange ideas and insights and fellowship with one another. But it was also formed for those seeking to learn from Yahweh, to analyze Scripture and to consider various questions related to Yah's testimony. And that group has also manifested itself in a chat room for what we call Yada Yah Radio, which is on Friday evenings. We do a Shabbat presentation on Yah's testimony, and there's a chat room associated with that. And there's also an outgrowth of it. There's a Skype-related chat room for this program where a number of people of who are, like you, Robin, members of God's covenant family, also communicate and share with one another, and a number of websites where God's family meets and shares together. And so there is a lot of support there, but also the whole purpose of the Torah is God's guidance and his covenant is to support us.
That's right.
Still
doesn't,
celebrate
you know, their contributions and share their life with Yah.
Yeah, that is exactly right. There's really nothing that we can do that is more important in this life than to do as he recommended, which is to walk away from religion early and decisively so that we not only are we no longer corrupted by it, but so that we have the opportunity to engage in the covenant, to rely on Yahweh, to become his children, to be perfected by him, to be enriched and empowered by him, because not only is that the eternal promise for our souls, but those whose lives are led away from trusting governance and religious institutions and towards engaging in the covenant, that there will be the ripple effect that they too will enjoy all of the blessings of the covenant. And so what you are doing in terms of learning and sharing is exactly what Yahweh would have us do. That is the best use of our time and our minds and our opportunities here in this mortal realm. May Yah bless you.
Yeah,
which means radiate Yah's light. Thank you, Robin, for calling.